Thinking Behind It All with Melusine Knives.
The Thinking Behind It All.
San Bonani, welcome to The Thinking Behind It All. As you already know, this is a pro-black podcast that looks at mainstream news, the trend, on a weekly basis. I've got the usual suspects here with me. Got Ricardo. What's up, Ricardo?
Hey, everyone.
Hello, Pauline.
Hi.
Show Ice.
What up, doll?
Ntlantla.
Hola.
This is our 7th edition of TTBIA. Remember that you can always join the conversation on Facebook. The Thinking Behind It All is our page. Or on Twitter at TTBIA_. So last week we were running a competition under the hashtag #CheckOutTTBIA. Essentially, we are asking you as a listener to retweet or share any of our status or tweet with commentary. Simply just say how you feel about TTBIA, whether you like it or not, and you stand a chance of winning a prize.
The usual suspect's perspective.
All right, Ntlantla, what stood out for you this past week?
The Mamelodi Sundowns versus Barcelona match. Patrice Motsepe, the brother-in-law of the now current president, was able to bring Barcelona through South Africa at a tune of 170 million rand. That's how much it costed for us to see Barcelona on a South African pitch. What's interesting is how these political demagogues could just arrange these matches in the name of Nelson Mandela, but spend so much money on a match of football. You know, how does that really benefit the people of South Africa?
My understanding that match cost Motsepe 45 million and it was out of his own pocket. That's what I understood about it. I was rather perturbed to learn that this match, the Mandela Centurion, was supposed to be played by Bafana Bafana. That is South Africa's national soccer team. And because this businessman who has ties with the presidency, I think that's a very important fact to note, decided that he could bring Barcelona, a European team, to South African shores. Everybody jumped on the bandwagon. In fact, when you listen to the analysis after the event on a station like Power FM, you have a political analyst such as Hadra Omaji who will claim that
Motsepe started his career as a mining magnate in 1997 when gold prices were at the lowest that they had been in South Africa and the world in over 3 decades. He used that opportunity to buy struggling mining companies that were on the verge of shutting down. And he really is, in that regard, a self-made billionaire.
Now, my problem with this is that, A, this was supposed to be a national event. And B, the subjectivity around such issues. If we were bringing a Russian team to play a team like Kaizer Chiefs or Pirates, I believe there would have been a little bit of controversy around that.
In terms of the whole Hadra Omaji thing, I'd say I'm not surprised, man, considering that she's in a transformed radio station that used to be pro-black, but now they're taking on these white lines. They were interviewing the mayor of Johannesburg, who's a member of the Democratic Alliance, the DA. He was basically saying that they're in the process of getting an interdict that's going to allow them to reappropriate buildings in the old CBD. This is in Johannesburg, because these buildings have been taken over by foreigners cuddling this white line. At the heart of Power FM is them being corporates, and corporates celebrate other capitalists within a liberal society. So it wasn't surprising what Hajra did.
Pauline, what stood out for you?
What stood out for me this week is the royal wedding. The false news, the toing and the throwing. Would Meghan's father be there to walk her down the aisle? Would she not? The sister talking about how she colluded with her father to set up a photographer to take photos to show that he's shown an interest in England and, you know, his daughter and so on, and how he was being measured up for a suit, and only to turn out at the end that a report has come out saying that he had a heart attack and he's in hospital and been treated for replacement of a stem. And it's just been on the news every day, every minute, what they're wearing, what they're eating, who's coming. It just seems to have got the whole of England alight.
So the royal wedding, you guys are preparing for that in typical English style, where the paparazzi is reminding you constantly, every hour, every minute, be aware, these are important people. Ricardo, do you have anything to say?
I honestly don't care about the royal wedding at all. It's a huge deal even here, obviously not to the extent that it is in England. Matter of fact, my mom was like, oh, are you gonna watch it? I was like, that starts at 4 a.m. here. There isn't a chance in hell I'm going to be watching that thing. Like, no chance. This not happening.
Yeah, Isaac and Lanza will be watching.
But you know what, though? People do care. So we talk about the paparazzi and the media and things, but there's millions of people who genuinely do care. So although it's annoying to us who are like, whatever, I mean, they are feeding a certain part of the society who do want to watch and know every minutia. So
I don't know where you got this thing that I'll be watching this royal wedding. I don't care much about that wedding. I mean, this crowd, dog, it's responsible for the plundering that's going on my continent right now.
Nah, Isaac, is cool now. Didn't you know the woman is like half black, so it's all forgiven now.
She's half black.
That's right.
Ricardo, what stood out for you?
I want to say this was in California, but I could be wrong, where a black family was barbecuing in a park.
It's illegal to have a charcoal grill in the park here.
No, it's not, actually. I just looked at the map. It says this is a designated barbecue area.
No, not for a charcoal grill. No charcoal grills are allowed. You must not have looked up.
What kind of grill are you not allowed, and why are you so bent out of shape over them being
because
here?
Because it causes extra money from our city to do things when children get injured because of improperly disposed.
So are you saying that they're going to hurt children out here, or I mean, like, what is the, with this?
There's laws about this park, and
I know the laws about this park.
And charcoal grills are not allowed here.
Are you sure? Are you sure it's not because you don't want black people being out here?
It has nothing to do with their race.
It seems like a new Jim Crow going on, because for some reason every time I see it, black people are the ones targeted regarding barbecuing at the lake. And you're a perfect example of it right now. It's two men sitting out here just chilling, and this whole setup is real clean. I don't see they're not. They don't have loud music. You want to call the police on them?
I have called.
You want to call the police on them for having a barbecue on a Sunday at the lake?
Yes.
I just looked at the map and it said this map is fine to barbecue. Nope.
My park. My park.
She said this was her park.
Yeah, I got.
So how did she talk to you guys? Was it a difference?
Well, I was out here by myself, and she came up here. I'm like, look, man, I'm minding my own business. I was like, I've been here 42 something years. I know where I can and cannot barbecue. Like, mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And she's like, it's against the law. I'm gonna go home and call the police. I'm like, you know what? Do what you want to do. Fire department rolled by here about two or three times, looked at me, waved, and kept going.
I was walking by and I saw her harassing him and stopped. He has done nothing. He's been sitting there chilling the entire time.
Yeah.
The gentleman the entire time despite her being super aggressive.
So her attitude was totally different before I got here.
It was just really aggressive towards her.
Wow.
Really?
So you gave me the white lady attitude. Thank you. That's why I came out here to show a difference. A white woman comes out here and she acts totally different. No, it's lost. Yeah, she just took a card out of my hand so that she could try and get this guy.
So you offered it to show it to
me? I showed it to you. I didn't say take it out of my hand. You stole the card. Can you please give it back? Because I would like it.
Sure, I'll just take a picture.
Give me my card without
please
taking
get out
a
of
picture
my face.
Of it. You stole my property. You stole my property. Guess who's a criminal now? Huh? Over a card?
I didn't steal
you
anything.
Stole
you
my
offered
property.
It up to me.
You stole my property.
You offered
give me
it up
the
to
card
me.
Back.
Leave me alone.
Give me the card back.
Back away.
Oh, you want to be left
leave
alone
me
now?
Alone.
You want to be left alone now?
Leave me
how
alone.
How about you give me my card that you just stole? Give me my card out of your pocket. You stole the card. What does that make you?
Yeah.
We have and now you want to be left alone. This is some irony. Huh? Can I have my card back?
I'm being harassed.
Okay. Can you back
I
off?
I would like her yes. The card that she stole from me.
Can you back off?
Yeah, sure.
Thank you. Thank you.
The woman who was questioning the white woman who basically approached a black child was also white, for total disclosure.
Yeah, we celebrate white heroes on TTPIA.
White heroes, okay. Hey, but you gotta mention these things. It's a part of the story. And so the cops were called and tears were shed, not for the black family that was inconvenienced, but by the white woman who called the police on the black family.
She was crazy, yo.
And she claimed harassment. It was surreal. That's the only thing I could say. It was surreal to watch it unfold.
No, man. Yeah, it's part of white supremacy, you know, this thing. Plus, she's an old white lady. She kind of reminded me of an Africana lady, you know, even how she looked, you know. I mean, in South Africa, we regard those people as fossils from apartheid, you know. Because, I mean... racism is still fresh in the mind. You can see this, you know, that she's terrified of these blacks having a nice time in the park.
Ice, what stood out for you?
Trevor Manuel's speech at the University of the Western Cape. What he goes with here is slamming the previous administration. He accuses President Zuma of appointing incompetent ministers. And this just confirmed to me that there is a purging by the New Dawn of anyone who was associated with RET. I mean, Trevor Manuel is also part of the 100 billion investment squad. That's what I would call them, the Lions, right? That are going to help Cyril. And more than that, he has Cyril's ear. So this shows that he's getting support from the presidency. I mean, no one is lashing him for speaking like this. And when you look at where he is, he's in the Western Cape as well. This seems to be like the stronghold for affluent white people. These are people with wine farms in the Western Cape. And what he speaks about in terms of land appropriation is just on some, we need to include white people in the conversation, you know, things that aren't speaking to what will happen to the black person. You're not speaking as to how we're going to appropriate this thing and make sure that black people are at the front of getting this land.
While we talk about this race thing, I'd like to bring to the fore the utterances made by AfriForum's CEO, Kali Creel. He made a remark saying that apartheid was not a crime against humanity. And of course, people jumped on that. It was a stupid thing for him to say. It was ridiculous. But it just got me thinking, like, isn't it just so easy for people to be called out for making such stupid statements? And it should be. However, why is it always difficult for us to take the discussion about racism a little bit further? We always want these easy victims. It's easy to tell an Afrikaner man, yeah, you're talking nonsense. Because you know everybody's going to pile on in society. And mainstream always is guaranteed to bully such people. And when we think about democracy and freedoms, ultimately hate groups can also exist in that society. It's just about whether they are going to do something about that hate. So do they go around shooting black people, for example? Or do they subjugate black people? I am offended by such a comment, but not to the extent where I want to jump up and down about it and say how unfair the world is to the black person, because we know this is how white people roll. They think about these things all the time. They discuss these kind of things in their circles. When they have tea, this is what they talk about. When they have suppers, this is what they talk about. If you have any comment about what we discussed under the USP, usual suspect perspective, please drop us a comment on Facebook, The Thinking Behind It All, or on Twitter at @TTBIA_. And remember, if you retweet or share any of our posts with commentary saying what you think about TTBIA, you stand to win a prize.
The fire was all-consuming, devastatingly quick, and it was the worst fear of residents who had raised general concerns about fire safety in the past. Why were they ignored? The investigation will likely focus on the cladding, which experts believe accelerated the blaze. Rain screen cladding, curtain wall facades, and replacement windows were all fitted to improve the thermal insulation and modernize the look of the building.
What you have with the gap between the insulation and the external cladding is in effect a chimney. The fire gets out of the flat, it sets fire to the insulation, the flames start rising, they rise through the gap between the cladding and the insulation because it can touch the whole of the surface.
According to a planning document, it was only added to improve the view of the building for the surrounding area, which includes luxury flats and conservation sites.
So we've discussed with the Department of Communities and Local Government, local authorities and the fire service a process whereby we seek to identify towers that might be in a similar process of refurbishment, run a system of checks and inspections so that we as quickly as possible can give reassurance to people.
The tower had stood for decades, but was refurbished only last year. A typical floor is said to have 4 2-bed apartments and 2 1-bedroom apartments, with 1 central staircase and 2 lifts. A new smoke ventilation system was installed in the lobby, with a detector and a signal on each floor connected to a central system. This smoke ventilation system was designed to protect the stairwell from smoke if there were a fire within a flat. The main fire escape on the ground floor was from the boxing club lobby. The contractor responsible for the £9.7 million refurbishment was Ryden. Their headquarters are in Kent.
We spoke on the phone and we can speak with the director, okay. Someone like that.
We're not available for interviews at the moment, but we have a press statement.
The statement said, Ryden completed a refurbishment of the building in the summer of 2016 for the Kensington and Chelsea Tenant Management Organisation on behalf of the council, which met all required building control, fire regulation and health and safety standards. This tower, just by the Grenfell Tower, was built at the same time to the same standard. The fire expert explained how its safety features are designed.
There's one fire escape, that's enough.
Yeah, because what they've limited is the travel distance from the potential fire source into a sterile stair core and protected zone. There's no combustibles in here, or very, very minimal. Therefore, there's no fire source and shouldn't be any fire spread potential. Therefore, people can move from the flat through their door, through the first lobby door, through the second lobby door, through the third lobby door, and into the stair core. They're moving through increasing levels of safety.
The Kensington and Chelsea Tenant Management Organisation acknowledged that issues had been raised by residents and said they would form part of the forthcoming investigations.
The Grenville Tower was an awful tragedy that happened last June, where over 71 people had died in a fire that quickly caught in a tower block which was owned by the council. There's a lot going on concerning the health and safety issues that weren't covered in this block. They didn't have fire sprinklers. They didn't have good exit plans. Well, the victims at the moment, they're still in a quandary because their needs haven't been met. And I don't think Theresa May is doing enough to support the victims at all, and it's taking such a long time to resolve the housing issue for some of these people. It's appalling. It's absolutely appalling.
Hey, Pauline.
Yeah.
When I was reading about the incident, I saw something about contracting and how the contractors were subcontracting and the quality of the materials were poor. Was that like a big issue in the investigation?
If you're given a contract and you're going to sublet it out, you're subletting it out a lot cheaper than what you got the contract for. So that only encourages the third person to use cheaper materials. And obviously, that's what happened right in this case, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I was quite surprised why they use this cladding, because I think in Saudi Arabia, they had the same thing.
How is the black community affected that side? Is it them that lives in those kind of places?
In that particular block, it was mainly immigrants, black people. To be honest, there were all kinds of people from all kinds of races, but there were a lot of immigrants living in that block. And I think this is one of the reasons why they're dragging their feet, because a majority of them are people of race. So they probably just think, oh, well, you know, what's happened. We're sorry, but, you know, we'll do things in our time. No, they can't treat people like that. You know, just disregard us and want to pick us up as and when they like it, when tragedies like this happen. If this had happened in a private block where, you know, say it's about 2-3 million and there's about 6 apartments and they were all occupied by Caucasian people, do you think they would have dragged their feet in having all these inquiries and not being able to house these people? No!
With the aluminium cladding, wasn't there like a process where we looked at the evaluation for the insulation?
That would happen when they put in to bid for the contracts. So when you bid for your contract, you're going to say, oh, it's going to cost how many millions to do, and you get your bid. And what's happened is that the company that got the bid put it out again to tender to someone else. So the third person now has gone and bought cheap and shoddy goods to do this job. Because there are other blocks of flats with this cladding around the UK, and the government has got a highly health and safety issue.
So in New York this past week, a patron came in and placed an order where he overheard a server speaking to another customer in Spanish.
Clients at your staff is speaking Spanish to customers when they should be speaking.
Being very violent. I mean, sometimes they do.
Very violent.
Every person I listen to, he's spoken, she's speaking it in America.
Yeah.
You're
yeah. He's in America.
And as the clip shows, he's just totally lost his mind and flipped out. So this kind of thing is not uncommon within private conversations.
Of course it's not uncommon in America, Ricky. Come on.
It's not uncommon.
It's how you guys roll. You know.
It's not uncommon anywhere where primarily one or two languages are spoken, I would think. I bet you it's the same in Australia. It's probably the same in Canada, minus French and English, obviously. It's just xenophobia and overwrought patriotism equals this kind of nonsense.
Ice, we see the ugly side of America coming out on social media. And of course, white supremacy tendencies seem to be depicted in that clip. Should we make anything of this?
Yo, man, definitely, man. With the domination of English in a country like South Africa, there's this thing of when you ascribe to speaking English, you're more likely to succeed, to gain access to the economy, and hence a country like the US would have white people believing that you can only express yourself in English. I think that English culture wants to diminish other cultures and the identities of the individuals belonging to these cultures. I feel it speaks to English domination worldwide. When the English come through in a place, they want to purge any other dominant culture.
When you're dealing with people internationally, how would you deal with them?
Mandarin.
Yeah, right. Anyway, Mandarin. Maybe in another 50 years, but not now. Yeah, and even people trying to speak English when doing business. So, okay.
Ricardo, do you view this as an issue of racism?
I think it's a combination of racism and nationalism. In this case, definitely an element of racism, because the person in the video is also saying that obviously these Spanish-speaking people are illegal immigrants. Obviously, he has no idea if they are or are not. But he just assumes they are because they speak another language that they don't belong, right? And he's also threatened to call immigration and custom enforcement on these people. And the people in the video are just laughing at him because they know he's a joke. But here's the thing. There's a lot of specifically white people who feel just like him.
Pauline, seeing that there is no official language in America, is this kind of behavior justified? And how do we deal with the language debate in situations where it's demanded that English should be the language that is spoken?
I don't believe that it is demanded, because
Pauline, clearly in that video he demands, the white man demands.
He demands, but he didn't get. He had an attitude. He assumed things about people he knew nothing of. And these people were in a shop where there was a Spanish-speaking customer and a server, and whatever they wanted, they ordered in Spanish. What's wrong with that?
But white privilege clearly showed that that man feels entitled to be heard and spoken to in English, and everyone around him should speak in English. But then let's go back to my question. What does this mean?
I just think it means, again, that people are becoming less tolerant, that's one, of other people's cultural identity. I think this is a part of the nationalistic wave that's starting to take over Europe and the United States.
But what do they speak predominantly in the UK and in the US? Is it not English?
It is English, yeah.
Yeah, it is English.
So we could make the point that English is actually the dominant language and the language where you attain some social capital from knowing English or being educated.
That is correct.
That's true, but I know for sure not everyone that we deal with in international business talks English.
That's the point I was making earlier about Mandarin. Ricardo, if black people, because we know black people to have a tendency of behaving in this manner too, what do you make of such utterances or such behavior?
From black people?
Yes, if black people behave in such a way.
I think, again, it's a level of intolerance brought along by xenophobia and nationalistic fervor, and it really doesn't belong anywhere. I can see why black people who speak English as their only language and their first language for how many over 100 years would feel the same way as their white racist or white supremacist counterparts.
Is it self-hate?
No.
Why?
No, I'm asking you, why do you think it's self-hate, if you think it's self-hate?
Because black people are assuming the position of the white master, demanding of others to speak proper. And to speak proper in what language? In English. That is not
historically... They're saying to speak English, but not speak proper. Let's not...
Yeah.
No one was saying them to speak proper.
Okay, fine.
Speak English.
So why is it that we must choose English to be the language that unifies us as black people?
Why? You mean
English?
Specifically in the United States or just all over the world?
No, I'm saying within the Pan-African diaspora.
I'm not saying one language should be spoken over another necessarily, but this is kind of the way the chips have fallen. So if you're going to say black people should speak another language, what language should we speak?
Glenda, don't you think this is self-hate?
What a leading question! Don't you think this is self-hate? Well, you're turning on to those liberal media places that you hate so much. You're leading question.
I think it does have an element of self-hate. Because as a black person, you should know at least one African language. It's quite a shame that us as black people, we seem accepting to be dominated by whites. Because if you look at Asians and other races, you find that they're very strong in their language and their culture. And for us, because of colonization and how whites have shaped our society, we seem fine speaking their language.
So here we go in Glangla. You speak about Asian culture. Vietnam, which used to be called Indochina, was ruled by the French, right? A lot of Vietnamese know French, but yet they still mainly speak Vietnamese, right? So how come in African nations, they eschew their own native tongues for English?
That speaks to the whole white supremacy element, that there's still white domination and the system is still driven by white individuals. Because as Isaac mentioned earlier on, English as a language is a currency. You need to be able to speak English just to get a job. You need to speak English to get an education. You need to speak English just to be heard on a media platform.
And this is all over in South Africa.
Yes.
You have to be able to speak English in order to get an education.
Yes.
Shut that down. If that is the case, then, right, where we are today, you people can stand up and say, we want to qualify, get our education, but we all want to be educated in our language. Because you can do so.
I'm glad that you're saying this. However, the self-hate remains a problem. Because if you're going to have a black person in any society, for that fact, I understand that you may only know English, it may be your lingua franca. However, if you're not going to be cognizant of the fact that you're only insisting that someone else should speak English to you on the basis of you having learned that kind of behavior from a white person, or having learned the language from a white person, then I take issue with that, because you should be aware of that. You should know that that is an element that speaks to self-hate. And Ricardo seems to differ with me on that point.
It is nothing to do with self-hate. That is not hate. And Lucy, that is nothing to do with self-hate, because even I, as a child, my parents speak patois. I can speak patois.
There's a history when it comes to language. Language is not just simply about grammar and techniques of speaking a language. No, language is a societal device that we use. We use it to denigrate people as much as we use it to uplift people. We do a lot with language. So yes, you may want to argue that it's not self-hate. Yes, on a conscious level, you may not see it as such. But when you consider the history of that language, that it forms part of your culture, surely you can acknowledge that this is a language that was used to oppress me. And here I am, want to advocate for others. I'm using it the same way that the oppressor used it, to say, you need to speak English. That is the behavior that was exhibited by slave owners. It's the same behavior that was exhibited by the colonial masters when they came to Africa.
So let me speak of it strictly from a American perspective, right? Because the South African perspective is slightly different here, right? So if you're black, you live in the United States, more than likely your descendants were slaves, right? Let's say if you were direct descendants of slaves brought to America, your lineage goes back hundreds of years, right? So for hundreds of years, your descendants have spoken English, right? At a certain point, I acknowledge that this was a language forced upon your descendants, right? But at what point do you make it yours? Is it now your language now? I mean, black Americans consider themselves Americans. We don't consider ourselves Blackanese or something else. I mean, there is a certain level of integration, but after a while, although you didn't want it, or your great-great-grandmother or grandfather didn't want it, eventually it does become yours through assimilation. We have embraced that as Black Americans. Like, English is our language. We've been speaking it for 300 years. We know no better. That part of our history was stolen from us. How can it be self-hate, right? When this is something you internalize. I am American. I speak English. You should speak English to me. I'm not saying it's a right thing to think, right? I'm just saying, is it really self-hate when that's what you believe?
Why can't you be conscious of all of these factors that you just mentioned? Why can't you be conscious of the fact that we use language in a myriad of ways to socialize ourselves? If you can't be conscious of that, then
but most people aren't.
But you see, that's what I'm saying. It's an element of self-hate. Self-hate is not a means to say that you're an awful person. No, it's just a term to recognize that there's a problem here with how we conceptualize certain things or certain social behaviors. That's what it boils down to. I'm sure that there are certain things that I do, people can actually say, yo man, are you conscious of ABC? The same goes for Isaac, the same goes for Ntlantlas, the same goes for Ricardo, and same goes for Pauline.
So you're hating yourself, or you're denying a part of you? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, it's a part of self-denial.
If you're Christian, is that self-hate? Most people did not choose to be Christian. It's something that come down from generation to generation and from Europeans. So if you're Christian, is that self-hate?
Christianity has been passed on. It's been passed on through language. Language carries far more than just a way of us communicating with each other. It carries the history of a certain culture, what they stand for, their principles. With language domination, we can often lose our identity, especially as Africans.
And that's if you also assume that Christianity is actually a white religion, because that is also debatable in itself. And it's because of language, again. It illustrates it. Now we say Christianity
talking of it as if it's from European descent. And we know that scholars already debate that a lot. It's highly contentious to a point where many are accepting that the religion comes from Africa.
See, I wasn't disputing that. I was making the argument that Europeans, white people, were the ones who spread Christianity, often via colonialism and the end of a gun.
Yeah, the washed up version.
Israel is facing widespread condemnation after its forces killed at least 55 Palestinians on the Gaza border during protests coinciding with the opening of the U.S. embassy in Jerusalem. 128 countries have backed a UN resolution condemning Washington's recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital. South Africa has withdrawn its ambassador to Israel in response to the violence.
Mayhem on the Gaza border with Israel, as thousands came to protest the controversial inauguration of the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem.
This massacre is taking place at the same time when the United States of America illegally and unilaterally and in a provocative way is opening its embassy. It is very, very tragic that they're celebrating an illegal action while Israel is killing and injuring thousands of Palestinian civilians. This is the life of the Palestinian people, and those who think that opening the embassy open doors to peace, let them look at what is really happening in the Gaza Strip.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu called it a glorious day as President Donald Trump's daughter Ivanka and her husband Jared Kushner, who's also a White House envoy on Middle East peace, officially opened the embassy, while 80 kilometers away, scenes of deadly chaos.
While presidents before him have backed down from their pledge to move the American embassy once in office, this president delivered. Because when President Trump makes a promise, he keeps it.
Israel's Defense Force called the protesters rioters, attempting to ignite fires on Israeli territory, while the UN Secretary General is being pressed to appoint an independent investigation into the deaths of all those killed during weeks of protest.
The significance of the move of the American embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem signifies the ongoing process of the total recognition of the Jewish state. We know ever since Israel, the Jewish state, there's been this ongoing development of what form of state would Jerusalem take, given the whole Palestine situation. Because we have the Palestinians claiming Jerusalem as the holy site, and we've got Israel claiming Jerusalem as the holy site and its capital. But the move by the U.S. president to recognize Jerusalem as a Jewish state was a move to show to the Palestinians that the U.S. do not recognize them as an independent state. So that move caused some Palestinians to want to rebel, because here was a government telling them that they don't recognize their claim to the holy site. Now the question is, what really is Trump doing here? Because he's been warned consistently that he should not move the embassy that side. But he's not getting the support now from the white establishment to say, it's a good thing you moved there. You know, seemingly Hamas is getting support from the EU and other parties that have been opposed to Trump's policy in the Middle East recently.
Ricardo, what do you make of the move? And what was the mood like in America once the move happened?
I'm gonna tell you, most people in the United States didn't really care. Well, when the news of it came down, I looked at it, I was like, this is gonna be a big problem. Most of the backers of the move were your ultra conservative Christian type, evangelists and such, who, you know, are more willing to support Israel as the Jewish state because they feel that Jewish people are the chosen people. And that's fine, and that's well, but from a political standpoint, it made no sense. And I think that the major point of this move was the Obama backlash, right? So Barack Obama had a harder stance against Israel than most United States presidents have had, right? And I feel like Donald Trump felt like whatever Barack Obama did, I must do the exact opposite. So I must be more ingratiating to Israel now.
So you agree with Atlanta's sentiment that the establishment is not happy with what Trump has done?
It's really hard to say because our establishment is so fractious at the moment. It just depends on who you ask what answer you're going to receive. I don't think anyone is happy about it. They might be ambivalent, but I don't think anyone is really jumping for joy in the administration that this happened.
Pauline, the violence that we saw playing out when the announcement was made, what do you make of it?
It was appalling. Over 60 people died. Almost 2,000 people were injured in that peaceful protest. Those people were not armed. These people have the right to protest because they are on their land. I find it hard to believe the history that the Jews have had, and for them to turn round and treat other people, you know, regardless if they're Muslim or Christian, to treat them in the manner in which they're treating them.
Isaac, we know from Jewish accounts.
Meanwhile, on Israel's border with Gaza, which is controlled by the Hamas terrorist group, thousands of Palestinians protested against Israel's existence, against its founding 70 years ago, and against the U.S. moving its embassy to Jerusalem, which Palestinians also claim as their capital. Israeli soldiers shot dozens of the protesters near the border fence, including teenagers, and the optics, superficially at least, seem compelling. Here's heavily armed Israelis slaughtering Palestinian civilians. And that's exactly the picture the Palestinian leadership wanted. Palestinian politicians like Mustafa Barghouti are exploiting this, and with some success.
I've met so many ministers, so many prime ministers in the world who always told us, why don't you march peacefully? This is exactly what we are doing.
Excuse me, peaceful protests? Not so. There were the stone throwers, for instance, and groups of potentially armed men hiding behind smoke screens of burning tires, just waiting for the fence to fall, or trying to storm it while throwing Molotov cocktails. And if those thousands of protesters had broken through into Israel, what then? How many Jews would they kill?
Don't you think, on some level, when it's time to defend yourself, humans will do that?
We do want to survive. I guess you do get into that protective mode with fight or flight. You choose to fight. With regards to the US and Israel, they wanted to, I guess, strengthen that bond as allies. I think the lesson for us here on a pro-black podcast, I'd say we also need to choose our allies wisely, depending on which context we are, because there are benefits that can accrue to aligning yourself to certain people and just choosing your lines better.
Glanta, is it a case of the Palestine people just being left destitute by their fellow Muslim states? Because other Muslim states have been quiet on this. We have not seen them taking any action. So what does this mean? It's a bit suspect, would you not say? And now people want to say that America and Israel affirming their love for each other as two nations is a huge problem.
Yeah, it is suspicious that all these Muslim countries are quiet, but you know, the Middle East is as rich it is because of the trade deals that it has with the US and other Western powers. So they're quite complicit in the agenda because they're part of the agenda. If you look at the underground societies that are running this thing, you know, the Freemasons, the Muslim Shriners. I mean, the Muslim countries are in this with the US, and it runs deep.
Yeah, yeah.
Ricardo, don't you think it's a bit conspiratorial talk about Freemasonry and the like when it comes to this issue?
Yeah, I don't believe it's as conspiratorial as Inglangwa seems to think it is. He did hit on a couple key things, though, about oil and the certain influence that the United States has over these Middle Eastern oil-producing nations. So I'd also throw out another point. So we have Saudi Arabia clashing with Qatar, right? We have the whole crisis in Syria, and Syria's touching on the borders with Jordan, right? Egypt's going through their governmental upheaval. So which one of these Muslim countries doesn't have their own internal issues that they're considering? So if you're, for example, Saudi or Egyptian or Jordanian, what holds precedent? Your internal struggles or the Palestinian struggle? I think it's a combination.
It's a good question that you're asking, but then it speaks to how your people are always quick to betray you in your time of need. Here's the world condemning America for advancing their interests with Israel. At the heart of it, when you think about the nature of politics and diplomacy, is there really something wrong with America being an ally to Israel if America knows that it benefits them somehow? That's what politics is about. People form alliances, people form relationships all the time. And why should it be scrutinized to a point where we want to condemn America for being allies with Israel?
I don't see an advantage to the United States moving their embassy to Jerusalem to create tighter bonds with Israel. Not for nothing, except for actual talent. So, you know, Israelis will come to the United States in the technological fields mostly. But dollars? Like goods? No. No. The United States doesn't really gain anything.
That brings me to my next point, Pauline. South Africa closed its embassy in Israel, and the Jewish Board of Directors in South Africa, they are calling the government hypocritical for making this move. What do you make of South Africa closing its embassy?
I'm with South Africa on this. If you see something is wrong in a country and it isn't right, you can't be complicit with it. You have to do something. Even if it's you, one, make a stance on what you believe.
Okay, sure, Em. I mean, to answer your question, which what's wrong with the USA supporting Israel to push their own common interest, the only reason would be, how do we benefit from just letting the US and Israel just do as they please in the territory, right? From a pro-black perspective, you know, it's quite important to know historically whose land is Israel. Historically, that's our land there. That's black people's land there.
Isaac, do you agree with the notion that we should be making a big deal out of this? Noting the obvious hypocrisy in this whole situation, you have Britain also making a statement that this is not right. Now, all of a sudden, you want to side with this, knowing your stance on Britain?
It's truly a complex issue, this one, right? Because we know in Israel, it gets into religion. And it's that thing I said earlier about, you know, us drawing our lines and you choosing which side you want to belong to. Jewish people are very influential in terms of the funding they provide for politicians in Wall Street. I'd say they're very influential here in South Africa instead of in terms of the banking system. They own some of the biggest major banks, but the mines
as
well. But
if they were so influential, then surely the government wasn't going to move the embassy.
It's in line with keeping to our ally right now.
The contradictions in this story.
Well, you know what? In politics, you are hypocritical. And it is because politics is so complex. But at the end of the day, things will be dealt with diplomatically.
So Inglangwa, when he was speaking about the black interest in the Israeli-Palestine conflict.
Palestinians wouldn't say that that land belongs to black people.
Arabs do not consider themselves black.
We know this. All. We see this in Northern Africa, how Arabs behave. They don't see themselves as black.
Rick, if you can just go research what the historians say about the Jews, the original people that occupied the place, they'll tell you that they were black.
Where is David Mabuza? At the beginning of this week, the Office of the Presidency releases a statement that it's going to send the new Deputy President D.D. Mabuza on a special envoy to Russia to congratulate Putin on his re-election into office and to strengthen the bonds that were made during President Zuma's administration. But what's funny is that on the day of arrival,
it was thought that the meeting between Russian President Vladimir Putin and the newly appointed envoy to Russia from South Africa, David Mabuza, took place in Moscow on 15th of May. And there were actually media reports that that meeting took place today. However, we don't actually know. There's been nothing on the Kremlin's website to confirm that meeting. And there've been no reports in Russian media of such meeting taking place so far. And also, Vladimir Putin, the Russian President, he was in Crimea during the day today, opening a new bridge.
The latest that has developed is that Putin is actually not happy that Mabuza was sent instead of Cyril. He would have preferred Cyril to come and speak and not just send his deputy to speak on his behalf and send him a letter. This was because President Zuma and Putin had created a stronger bond, and what reports are showing right now in The Citizen is that Mabuza actually went to Russia because they heard that Msholozi might also go to Russia so as to speak to his friend Vladimir Putin. Putin is not happy as to how President Zuma was ousted out of office with the nuclear deal being in the balance. It wasn't finalized yet. There's been a lot of dodging by our president in terms of his international diplomatic work. As I said in previous podcasts, he chose to go to England first, and instead of going to Russia to talk to Putin about the way forward on the nuclear deal, he has actually chosen to go to China before and go to speak to Xi Jinping first.
And Lanta, we saw the initial report from the Malian Guardian, in which it was basically stated that D.D. Mabuza is going to Russia. But for a newspaper like the Malian Guardian, there was no actual unpacking, be it an economic analysis or a political analysis of the trip. It was a couple of paragraphs which essentially illuminated the press statement from the president. What do you make of this?
They are an establishment newspaper. I mean, they work for the Queen. They are there to establish the political hegemony right now, which is now led by Cyril Ramaphosa. Russia is not such a good subject to talk about because you'll have to speak about the nuclear thing. You'll have to talk about the IPP, the independent power producers. You have to talk about that as well, and how it features in a broader global war that's going on between the West and the East, you know. So Malian Guardian does not want to keep us in the loop. They rather have us in the dark so that they can easily manipulate us with their narratives.
Ricardo, in the SABC section, in terms of how they covered the news at first, on the day on which the Deputy President of South Africa was supposed to meet Putin, we see the presenter several times emphasizing that a meeting was held.
The meeting did take place, but officials are playing their cards close to their chests about what was actually discussed. Was getting FaceTime with the Russian president is a fairly big deal. Do we have any idea, at least, how long that meeting might have lasted? All right, we'll leave it there with our Julia Yubyova in Moscow giving us an update on the deputy president's trip there, meeting with the Russian president, Vladimir Putin.
Whereas the correspondent is saying that there are signs of no meeting taking place.
Well, indeed, it was thought that the meeting between Russian President Vladimir Putin and the newly appointed envoy to Russia from South Africa, David Mabuza, took place in Moscow on 15th of May. And there were actually media reports that that meeting took place today. However, we don't actually know. There's been nothing on the Kremlin's website to confirm that meeting. And there have been no reports in Russian media of such meeting taking place so far. We did try to speak to the South African embassy earlier today, and we got through to the press department, and we actually requested an interview with David Mabuza today. However, the embassy, South African embassy in Moscow, said that David Mabuza has a very busy schedule and therefore wouldn't be available for an interview, and also the embassy wouldn't give any other details of his visit to Russia, how long he will be staying here for, when he will meet Vladimir Putin, or how long this meeting would last. Unfortunately, we don't have any of the details from the South African embassy in Moscow.
Isn't this a bit of trickery?
Absolutely. And I was tricked partially myself, I must admit, because the first time I saw the video, I didn't catch it. And I said, I don't know, this sounds like they can't confirm that there was a meeting. What's the problem? And then M pointed out, listen to the man and what he keeps insisting happened. And I listened again, I'm like, Oh, that is some slick talk, right?
That was very slick.
I was like, whoa, okay. I was focused on the woman, and she's just saying, nothing happened. But here's what I think really went down. But it was trickery. I think the South African government said something happened without it actually getting confirmation. Like, they counted their chickens before they were hatched, right? Then it blew up in their face, and they tried to save face, right? And it just didn't work. So I'm looking at it like Putin and his government said, whoa, hold on, black man. Relax. We'll get to you when we get to you. We're not going to meet you today. You sit there in your embassy and wait till we contact you, okay? We got a bridge to open over here in Crimea. Hold your horses. I think that's what happened.
Putin, what should a government like Cyril Ramaphosa's do in an instance like this? They're trying to appease your government on the one hand, and they're trying to appease your government's enemy. What are they to do?
For a start off, they've got to be transparent and be patient, because it seems as though they really want this meeting with Putin, but Putin isn't going to be rushed by no one. And to put a little note in a newspaper, that's like a bit of a fake news, to kind of stir something up kind of thing, you know? Because the meeting hasn't actually happened. And when you see the interview and you see how the guy's kind of trying to, you know, speak it over with the woman, and so you think, she's not going along with it, but he knows exactly what he's doing.
Isaac, what are the politics on the grassroots level? What are we dealing with here? What's possibly a big problem that can arise from this?
Well, here in South Africa, it's about RET versus New Dawn. Us securing South Africa and getting a nuclear deal so that we have power, free power for people, free long-lasting energy for people that don't have electricity in our country. It's about securing our borders as well, because when you get a nuclear plant, it means a bump up in your military intelligence as well, you know. I think that's gonna help us achieve what we need for Africa, and especially for Africans, if more Africans were to get onto this idea of us having nuclear, would be the first in Africa to do such. This would help us become a global force when we think of ourselves as a country. what does this mean for BRICS, right? This is not just about we choosing China over. Russia is also part of BRICS, one of the big countries within the BRICS allied nations.
Isaac, I think that South Africa has a very unique opportunity here. So as a British Commonwealth, you guys can make good deals there. But in my opinion, that should not preclude South Africa from making deals with China, Brazil, Russia, the United States. If I were you guys, look for the best deal out there. I think you guys should not let Britain or the United States dictate your infrastructure in that way. It makes no sense, when you, especially since you could basically do business with all. Why not? I mean, this is a global economy we live in. So I see no reason why these Western nations should, you know, henpeck and block in African nations
because
only
because
dealing
they stand,
with
they
one.
Stand to lose in such situations.
That's true.
Do you understand? The Western Cape wanted to privatize electricity just a few months ago.
Somebody's going to win, somebody's going to lose. And no matter what, at the end of the day, you are in a very powerful position. A very, very... And I think it's time you guys really realize the strength that you have.
So, I agree, sure. It's easier said than done, because when people
this
do take plans to align themselves with something that's gonna give us a nuclear deal, we rather know we'll find the wrong and the corruption in that, and rather get
too much
checks and loans from Theresa May. That's the stance our president has taken in the few months.
They just don't trust black people with nukes. That's all that is. I mean, can we call a spade a spade? No pun intended.
Yeah.
They look at we can't have these people messing with stuff like this. You know, I really feel that's the biggest thing.
If anything, this actually proves what the question is often asked by people outside, which is, how can it be that you guys are the majority in a country and yet you are still ruled by the minority? You know, that is one question that people from the US, Europe, that know a little bit about South Africa, and they found out that racism is so rife and that the wealth of the country is not in the hands of the people. They ask that question, how is it possible that you don't do anything about it? But this is a very good example thereof. Here's an opportunity to empower yourself as a nation, to be counted among the powerful nations, not just in Africa but also in the world. Yet we have politicians who find ways to undermine that process with the assistance of the establishment. Thank you for joining us for the 7th edition of TTBRA, The Thinking Behind It All. Please remember that we have an ongoing competition. If you retweet or share any of our posts with commentary on how you feel about the show, you stand the opportunity of winning a prize. Please let your friends know, your family know about TTBRA. They can follow us on Facebook. Our page is The Thinking Behind It All. The Thinking Behind It All. And our Twitter handle is @TTBRA_. @TTBRA_. Thank you to Isaac. Thank you to Ricardo. Thank you to Ntlantla. And thank you to Pauline. Until we meet next week. Sharp.
Sharp.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.